One of the things that happens in excuse me, in meditation, which reflects something that happens throughout one's entire life, is that we hide ourselves. We hide behind anything that we think we can use to protect ourselves from being seen or known. We all have a hidden nature. We may not know what that nature is, and we may not even realize that it's hidden. And in everybody, I think it's probably different. I think one of the things that most of us hide is our fear of vulnerability. We all want to appear somehow invulnerable. We want to appear like we know something, like we have some sense of what we're doing in this world, that we're assured of our own sense of self and purpose. And if you go deep enough into anybody, you see that that falls apart pretty quickly. Somewhere deep inside, we don't have a clue, and we don't want anyone to know that. So we create a presentation to the world that tries to tell people we know who we are and we know what we're about. And then you sit in meditation and you try to let go of all of that. And it's really fascinating to watch how each of us still finds a place to hide. A certain aspect of identity that we keep under some crevice inside some small part of our heart. And the more the meditation begins to penetrate and go deeper into your being, the more panicked, if you will, or frightened this deep part of you becomes. It's sort of the last refuge, the last aspect of self that keeps dodging out of the way. And you may not know what I'm talking about, because this is a fairly subtle thing that goes on in the class, and it's a fairly buried and hidden thing that goes on in your daily life. But there is this thing that is, in a way, the last vestige of ego that you need to both acknowledge and accept and ultimately embrace. If you sit here in class and you don't present your whole self to the class, true surrender can't happen. True surrender is a complete thing. It's not surrendering 99.4% of your being to God. It's not a percentage, it's a complete thing. And if you sit here and you feel somehow uncomfortable, or sometimes even very comfortable, but in truth, not completely available, the last place you want to look in yourself is in this deep hidden space. And all I can say is that the core of your spiritual evolution comes from that space. That it is essential to just be absolutely and courageously vulnerable. what I sense happening, particularly in today's class, is people taking a very subtle position behind something and opening all the rest. So that I kept feeling enormous opening in everybody, enormous and wonderful, but incomplete. And that the thing that was not quite presenting was, in a sense, challenging me to find it and to go deeper into some hidden crevice of you and try to just touch that thing. It doesn't need much more than to be just touched, to acknowledge that it's been found out, that it knows it, you know. And then not only does it need to be touched, it needs to be touched with a kind of absolute gentility and acceptance and love, so that even in that terrible moment of exposure, you realize it's okay. It's okay. I know this was taking place at very subtle levels, and you may not know what I'm talking about, and forgive me if that's the case. But what it comes down to in the larger life that you live every day is that this tiny speck of ego, when it's hidden, impacts all of your exchanges with everybody all day long. And if you live in denial of your whole self, if you live in denial of your own truth moment to moment, you will not have truthful existence. You will have a life of performance, a life of theater. You won't have your life. You will have the life of the character that you think you have created. It's not like you have to walk into the world and say to the world, this is me, this is all my hidden stuff. Because mostly, to be honest, people don't want to know your hidden stuff. But you have to know it. You have to know who you are. You have to know all of what exists in you and be it. Mostly what you discover is that your ego, in its hiddenness, is the last tiny thing that keeps you from God. The ego does not want to die. And in some deep, real, absolute truth, it's the only thing that does die. You do not die. You are eternal. Your ego, which is this tiny little I that separates itself from eternity, that tries to define you as something unique and special, ultimately has to dissolve. And you have to either let it dissolve or it will explode of its own nature. Ultimately, ego dies. Ultimately, ego is crushed by the weight of reality. The enlightened being attends to this ego. It observes it. It is aware of it. And it watches it as it starts to find deeper and deeper places to hide itself. Because it wants to maintain its potential to reemerge as you become more and more spiritual. Spiritual life in the aggregate is the diminishment of the ego self. But most people that you start to see growing spiritually start to bury this ego in a place that can be protected so that whenever the time comes, and it's always watching, it can reemerge with unbelievable force. And so when I sit in the class and I start to shave away the tiny little microcosm of that ego, it's really interesting how everybody, in a certain sense, is in a subtle dance of avoiding me getting there. Because as deep and spiritual and profoundly awakened as you already are becoming, you and I, part of this, are still protecting this seed of individuality that wants more than anything to own the universe. Ego is not so much an enemy, it is the last part of a robotic tool, if you will, that we use to live our lives in the material world. And this ego is an important and necessary functioning element in daily life. If you can abandon it, if you can truly allow yourself to let go of ego, the fullness and the completion of existence begins to express itself through you. It is the hardest part of spiritual practice. The ego doesn't die a gentle death, and it doesn't die a singular death. It is a process of letting go and letting go and letting go and letting go and letting go. And the deeper you go, the more you see what this thing is that needs to ultimately, in a sense, in the most perfect sense, sacrifice itself to God. Ultimately, this part of you has to go. And give itself over. When that happens, this crack of light comes through, and you simply become liberated. I saw a really interesting movie last night called Unknown White Male. And it's a movie about a man who completely loses his memory. Sitting one day on a subway, he realizes he doesn't know how long he's been there, he doesn't know who he is, how he got there, why he is there, he doesn't remember his name, he doesn't remember where he came from, he knows nothing about himself at all. It's a fascinating film, worth going to see just because it's a documentary and it's about a real person in the throes of that confusion. And it shows you how desperately one needs to know who one is. How hungry we are for the scraps of information about ourself, our separate unique individual self. There is this enormous drive to say what my name is. And there is a terror of losing that. And this man goes through that, and you actually watch him go through it. And then it's really quite fascinating. I don't want to give the movie away because I think you should all go see it. I don't know if you have to go see it, but it's worth the journey. But one of the things I asked the director who was there last night at the screening, I asked this man, when this man lost his sense of past, what happened to his sense of future? And he said that was a really interesting question. The past, in a way, defines our future. We build a future out of the past. And when his past disappeared, he could only build out of this moment. But one of the things he lost was creativity, which is really interesting. This is not in the movie, so I'm just giving you additional information. He lost creativity because he had nothing to draw it from, except that which is ultimate creation, which he didn't need to interpret. So when his girlfriend and he were on the beach trying to, she was drawing something, he couldn't draw anything. There was no impetus to draw. And in a certain sense, he couldn't project a future because it was based on nothing that pre-existed. So he became, as you can imagine, someone very much in the present, for whom the present became alive in ways that most of us don't understand. One of them is that he understood concepts. They were still there for him. So you could say apple. You could say apple, and he knew that such a thing as an apple existed. But it wasn't until he tasted the apple and smelled the apple that he really knew again what apple was. That knowing something is not cognitive, it is a full-bodied experience. And all of these experiences start to add up to our life. And that life is full of past history. That's all it is. It's past history. And that past history, we think of, is us. And in that past history, there is a weaving of identity. And that identity is, for many of us, filled with stuff that we don't want to recognize. Things for which we were told we were a bad person or a lesser person or whatever it is, a judgment that was made about our identity. And we start to put ourselves into this little category of hiddenness. This is the stuff I don't want to deal with. This is the stuff I don't want to expose. This is the stuff, if somebody knows, will not love me, will not nourish me, will not support my life, will not give me what I need. So you keep putting this stuff into that little category, which is, at the end of your meditation, the one thing for almost everybody that's still there. This man had all that wiped out, and it's interesting to watch what happens to a person where all that is wiped out. Really interesting. And again, I don't want to spoil the movie, so I won't tell you what happened to him in that. But I will tell you what happens to you and to me. And that is that as you start to surrender your life, as you really try to let go, this pocket of stuff that is so compressed and so locked away ultimately is your primary obstacle to the one thing we're looking for in this class. And so when we sit here, I will encourage you here and in your day to bring this thing to the fore, to sit here and just bring it up and put it out, and allow the energy of the class to do with it what it must, which is to accept it, embrace it, and dissolve it. And that's what this class can do and wants to do. And if you are sitting here, no matter how open you are, if you are holding this thing in check, in place, somewhere behind you, or wherever you tucked it away, as deep as this class will go, it will not free you. If you get really good at meditating, you will find that you are so available and so open that you feel this enormous flow and enormous joy and this enormous sense of being alive and wondering and feeling full of wonder in the world. You can walk away saying, "Ah, I'm liberated. I feel free. I feel wonderful." All I can tell you is that is a partial experience. What you're looking for is total experience. And the total experience means bring to this class, bring to yourself, or bring to God the last vestiges of what is hidden in you. I'm really coming to understand in my own practice, and it's been a very long journey, but it is an amazing journey, that we have to live truly on the edge of the moment that we're in. We have to live in this space all the time, this moment. You can't even begin to spend time thinking about the future unless you're doing it with great attention in this moment. Even thinking about the past must be thought about with great awareness of this moment. Living in this moment will bring you into a place of such profound and intimate awareness of yourself. All of your fears will present themselves, all of your passion, all of your love, all of your likes and dislikes, everything is here in this moment, everything. Living in that space is the most courageous thing you can do, and it is the knife's edge that will cut through everything and bring you into truth. It is the hardest and the easiest, the most frightening and the most wonderful way to live. I will tell you this, it will make you feel more alive than you have ever felt, ever. And you will begin to feel, as I have in many mornings of my life, a kind of happiness that, for me anyway, I have not known since I was 4 years old. It's not that you wake up one thing or another, happy or unhappy, you wake up whatever you are. And what you do to that moment is you go, ah. And the amazing thing is, you wake up emotional or stressed from your dreams or whatever it is you've been experiencing it the night or from 2 days ago, you wake up with that stuff and you just go, because you realize you've just awakened. You're up. You're here. You're in life. You're in the world. You are alive. You are in this moment. Somehow you are nowhere else but here, and this is the most extraordinary thing possible. And you wake up with that, and then this thing fills you up. It just fills you. And you realize you can now bring all of the universe, every moment of reality, to this second. And this second is your second, and you can live it completely. In this second that arises, part of what will come up is the hiddenness. And if you embrace that as well, if you just say, okay, to the whole, you will live a life that is the life you were born to be here for. It'll be the life that you were created for. And it will free you. In fact, living that moment is already freedom. I sense that some of what I'm saying feels abstract, and I apologize for that, but I can only tell you that when you are sitting in a very, very deep and silent place, and you are watching this thing that causes the tiniest bit of separation, hopefully this talk will come back and let you know what to do. Because the action that takes place at that moment is so small and so simple and so essential. And it just takes recognizing, that's all it takes. It just takes recognizing in that moment that the last speck of your ego needs to be loved and freed. So, any questions?
Paul? That's not abstract at all.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Therese.
I didn't feel as abstract as that. When you're describing that, I guess, acknowledgement or recognition of that small part of your ego, or whatever, is there a pain associated with that then?
It can be, yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons you don't go there. It's surrounded by... It depends on the person. I mean, there are people in this class for whom it is unbelievably defended. And there are others for whom it's not defended. Again, it's just kind of tucked away somewhere. But they think no one's going to find it there. For some people, it comes with pain. A lot of people, it comes with fear. Really, a deep fear. It's so fearful, you can't even go near it. And it's so fearful, in many cases, that you almost feel like you're going to black out if you look at it. And you could black out, literally, rather than go there. Because people don't want to. Some people, the buried issues are larger than others, but everybody has some. It's human nature to have some, and ultimately it's a survival thing. Often for survival, the ego does things that are, as I talked about in class before, deeply shameful, trying to survive for itself, me against the other. As soon as you go into me against the other, or me against God even, there's a great deal of shame and a great deal of embarrassment and hiddenness that comes into play with that. And we have enough of those incidents in our lives that we don't want the world to know it. And so it gets buried even when we're little children, you know, and it just is unaddressed. And when you do this meditation and it unweaves or unravels everything, it's got to come to that point. At some point, it's going to get there. And a lot of people sit in this class trying to let go. And they can't even, they know they're not touching something. They can feel it. They're not touching something that's still irking them. And it's for them, in many ways, unconscious. Other people, it's not that unconscious. They're pushing it into the corner over and over. But whatever it is, if you don't go there, this class doesn't complete its value.
Can it be associated with a certain chakra? Or?
Can. There are certain people. I mean, every person I sit with in class, the minute I sit with them, the configuration is completely different. It's like I've gone to another planet. You know, it's like, what's this? And then I have to, in that planet, do whatever is required to bring sunlight, atmosphere, embrace to that environment, to lighten it up. Some people you go to and the planet is so beautiful, you know, you sit there and you go, this is really lovely, and then you start to feel the mosquitoes in the distance, you know, something off. And that's where you have to go, because otherwise you just lie there and say, oh, this is so wonderful, I'm basking in the beauty of this person's being. But every being has mosquitoes, and it's not that it's bad to have them, it's acknowledge, let it sting me. Let it sting. Acknowledge what it is, let it come up, and then go yes to that. Yes. Rather than no. It's the no to that tiny little speck that ultimately gives you another lifetime when you die. It's that tiny little no that rejects a part of you that becomes the seed of your next lifetime. You have to be able to say yes. Ultimately, it's a complete, absolute, and total yes that's required in spiritual evolution. You just have to... It's not even a question. It's just... It's in a sense, thy will be done in the absolute. But if you have that one little thing that holds back, I'm telling you, I don't care how small it is, you're not going to be done here. It will bring you back into a whole other evolution of life, and you'll have to live a whole new lifetime for what? To be able to get to that one little speck that you've hidden in the last lifetime and free it. I'm saying free it now.
But if you do that at that moment, is that the moment lose your material existence, you die? Clear. Other people perceive as you just
dying? Yes, in a sense. I mean, some people will not perceive this happening. It can happen right now. And if it happened to you right this second, nobody would perceive you dying, but Therese would suddenly be extinguished. Gone. And what would be left? It's really interesting. I'll tell you one thing about this movie. This guy lost every sense of self, every aspect of who he was, no identity. Two things remained that were kind of interesting. Someone said, sign your name to this paper. And without thinking, he couldn't read it. But it was his signature, And he could see, all he could see was a D at the beginning. So he knew his name started with D. He didn't even know where it came from. There was no person left, but it still knew how to sign its name. And he goes to see his father, who he does not recognize at all. He has no idea who this person is. And his father is in a deeply disturbed state because his own son has no clue to who he is. His behavior with his father, at the moment he sees him, is puts his father down, starts putting him down for wearing a yellow shirt all the time. This is a guy who doesn't know who he is and doesn't know this man. He said, why does this guy wear the yellow shirt every day? You think he'd change his shirt? The interesting thing is that there are patterns of behavior that are locked into the system. But as you free yourself from being Therese or from being Bruce, there's still going to be something there functioning and at work. But it's no longer owned by you. It's just happening. It has an intent. It has an aspect of being that functions because that's what it is. And you let it function, but you don't have to be identified with it. You are free of it, and ultimately it is just a life of things going on. You start to see very quickly that all life is things going on. And you're not that. You are the collector of that. You are the thing that holds all that together and gives it a name that says it's Therese or Bruce or Paul or Bo or Phil or whoever. And you identify with it. When that lets go, when it's shattered, you're none of that. What are you? Suddenly this guy can't remember any of it. He's nothing. He doesn't exist but he's still here. He's still a body. He's still an awareness. We are that pure thing. We are that pure awareness, and for the moment we have a body. And this guy, when he realized he had a body, fell in love with being in that body. He loved, just like Rudy used to talk about a glass of water or orange juice, he was awed by the experience of that. That's the extraordinary thing of just being. Ego is the thing that owns that being, that says, that's mine. I have a better experience of orange juice than anybody else in the whole world. Or I have just drunk the worst orange juice that ever existed. You know, you have this relationship to it, and that's where you build ego and separation from God. And all you're trying to do here is allow that last vestige of separation to go. That's all. And that's ego death.
Did he let go of his ego at some point?
His ego disappeared.
Disappeared.
Ego meaning his memory. Now this guy is not an enlightened being. He's starting to form new memories and new identities, which is what happens to someone who's in this world usually. Spiritually, what we are trying to do is to consciously, day by day, minute by minute, and really instant by instant, just let go. Live this without collecting it, without holding it, hoarding it, making it me, just letting it be. It's just passing through. What's passing through is this extraordinary physical experience that you're having of being a body and tasting things and smelling things and loving things and hating things and wanting and not wanting. All of that is happening, and it's fine to let it happen. Let it happen. Just don't own it. Because ultimately, it's all going to get washed away anyway. And the thing that wants to hold on, that's the thing you're going to discover in the core of your meditation. This thing that's trying to hoard, that wants to be separate, that wants to be me as opposed to God. That little thing, that little voice inside you, that's the thing we're looking for. That's the place we're trying to get to in this class. Get to that place, and rather than try to kill it, which you cannot do, accept it, observe it, watch it. And finally, it has nowhere else to go, and it just realizes in its deepest and most profound sense that it has to surrender. It has to say, Uncle. And it goes to God, and it goes, I surrender. And then it's done. Anybody else?
How do we stay open when we go out into the world? And then persona takes over in scripted moments, like in a grocery store, when we know, when our self is not in that, when we bring that self to those moments, that self is, there's an expectation of behavior. And to be fully open is to allow anything to happen, to say anything, to be anything, because we're in that moment.
But you won't, because you're also, you know, you're Brian Szabo. That's who you are. That's who you are. That's what's going. That's the body form that you have taken at this moment in time, and it says and does certain things. If you become deeply, deeply surrendered to the universe, you think something is going to come up that is completely alien to you inside you? If you think that, and if there's a possibility of that, pay attention to that. If there is this demonic form waiting inside to explode at some sales clerk in a supermarket, watch it and let it rip and see what that's about. I will pretty much guarantee you it doesn't exist. Your fear of it exists, but the thing itself does not exist. It's fear that is your ego, and it's your ego that is simply holding you in check. Be free. What will probably happen when you let go of that is you will have the sweetest connection with that person you've ever had with another human being on the planet. You will just go, thank you so much for that, and I really appreciate it. And, you know, here's thank you for my change, and goodbye. But it will be real, complete, and honest, and no demon will emerge, no horrifying aspect of yourself will come out. Yes, we have those things in us, and maybe if you get drunk enough, I went to dinner the other night with, I have a friend who's staying here, he's maybe downstairs after class, and we went out to dinner with a friend of his who's a lawyer who was completely drunk. And I don't go out with very drunk people very often. And this guy was screaming in the restaurant. We had to take him out of the restaurant. He was blotto. And I have to say, it was pretty ugly. It was pretty ugly. And for him, he did have stuff. I mean, this is a guy who had a lot of stuff bottled up. And I could feel, I mean, there's no question about it. This is a whole lifetime of bottling stuff up. And he was letting it out in the only way he could, which was being really, really obnoxious under the influence of something that gave him a reason or at least an acknowledgement that he didn't have to be responsible. It's a clever way that a lot of people unburden themselves of a lot of these things. Ultimately, what happens when you do that is that you wake up the next day and there is shame, a lot of shame. And you take that stuff and you put it back in the hidden space. And that starts to build up. Somebody like this guy, if he was sitting in this class, and in this lifetime I would not expect that, but if he were sitting in this class, the shame load would be so vast that I would be lucky to get that much consciousness at play. That little bit of it. Because he couldn't look at all that. He just couldn't afford to look at it because it would be so totally overwhelming that he would be, his fear is, dissolution is justified. You know, his ego would be completely, that is really not his ego that would be shattered. He would become, his ego would be expanded into this vast force because he would feel so horrible, so terrible, that he would own his obnoxiousness in a way that would be so grand that he would be the worst person in the world. And when you have become the worst person in the world, that's ego. That's ego. To become worse than anybody else, which is what some people do, because at least that's their identity. I am the worst, I am the baddest. You know, it becomes their thing, and truly, breaking that down is work. That's really work. When a lot of us came to Rudy at the beginning of our practices, we were very thick, dense beings like that. We had a lot of stuff going on. Not we weren't the worst or the baddest, but we were heavy-duty ego beings. And Rudy just started cutting us down. And he would sit with us and he would work through all of these things. And in a sense, that's happening here. But nobody here is at that place of egoism. Nobody. We're already molded and reduced in a sense. We're much more spiritual entities. But the big heavy-duty ego people, they have a lot of work ahead. Just a lot. Could it all go away like in an instant? Yes. Will it? In a few? Mostly, probably no. The grace of God, as they call it, can come in and just shatter. Some egos get so big, the only place they have to go is shatter. And someone gets freed. People in enormous amounts of pain, real pain, ultimately can shatter in a second and be freed. God's love works in every possible way. Ultimately, I'm talking about ego like it's an enemy, but it's not. Ego is not an enemy, it's God's creation. It is part of what you are and need to be in this moment. It's also an extraordinary, extraordinary content. But ultimately, it's a container that needs to be let go of, and you have to figure out how to let go of it if you're going to be free in this universe. You need it for a period of time, and then you need to let go of it. We are all in that place, everyone in this room, learning this final practice. The final practice, let go of your ego. That's what we're here for. Other people are still learning how to build ego, how to work it, how to play with it. We are not. We've passed through the school of building ego. We are in the school of freeing ourselves of ego. And you cannot free yourself of ego if you hate your ego. You can only free yourself if you respect the ego for what it was, what it has been, what it had to be, what it could not have been otherwise. And you get it and you go, ah, and then you free. Okay. Anyone else?
Paul. Like you said too, Bruce, reality as a way of crushing the ego.
Well, it will in the end.
Concrete.
Yeah, that's the whole goal. In the end, it crushes it. I can only tell you, having had my ego bruised and, if not totally crushed along the way, it's the most difficult and painful experience there is. That's why my whole spiritual life, in truth, has come from not ever wanting my ego crushed that way again. I want to be able to let it go, because it's the only way, ultimately, to do it. I think having it be crushed is just so awesomely painful that you don't want people to suffer that way. And you don't have to suffer that way. It's not required. It's only required if you are deeply ignorant. And your ignorance is a part of ego. And if you choose that, and we do have this choice, that's the amazing thing about human experience. We have the choice to be as ego-maniacal as we want to be. But in the end, God wins.
And you're saying to love it without owning it.
Yes. Yes.
Obliterate it.
Yes.
You have to do that 100 times a day.
Yes. Yes. That's right. Love it without owning it. Pardon me?
It's part of your survival.
Yes. No, it's you. And it will be there on your deathbed. This thing will be there at the last moment. I don't care how liberated you are. It will rear itself one last time. It did for Christ. It did for Christ. Christ is hanging on the cross and he says, "Why have you forsaken me?" He's suffering and he can't get out. He is in pain and he can't find liberation. If that happens to Christ, what do you think is going to happen to each of us? But it's at that moment that Christ said, "Father, into your hands I deliver my soul." I believe those are the words. He said, "Into your spirit I deliver my soul." Or is it deliver my, into your hands I deliver my spirit? That is conscious surrender. It is conscious letting go. And the only way you will be able to do that at that last moment, I think, is if you have some inner muscle system that knows how to do it. Otherwise, you're sitting there freaking out. You're probably on the way to your own inner hell because you don't know how to get out of your own way.
And if you have a loved one who is experiencing the scenario you were talking about, who has the shame load that's so massive that to face it with your ego, they'd rather jump up a moving train. Everyone's karma is their own, everyone's path is their own, and it's so hard to see a loved one suffer.
This is where you need to truly trust God, or trust whatever you want to call this envelope of awareness and consciousness that loves us. You have to trust that it knows what it's doing, even in people who are suffering greatly. It's hard to do, but part of your work as an evolving spiritual being is, can you trust it, not just for you, but for the other? You have to, we have to, be able to do that, or otherwise we're caught up in our own doubt. Our own, you know, if you don't believe that God is helping that person who is suffering, then your doubt is your own, is your doubt. It's your problem. So you have to find a way to face that doubt. I'm not saying not doubt, but look at that doubt with great, with laser-like intensity. Look at it. And what happens when you look at your doubt with laser-like intensity is it tends to evaporate. something comes in and gives you a deeper, deeper sense of trust, truth. And I think that's what we're all tested to do on a daily basis, but it won't work. I mean, it will work, but if you're living in the moment, if you're living this life in this instant fully, this journey will be everything life is meant to be, and it will be a journey to great liberation. If you are living unconsciously and creating this ego structure and all of this pain and suffering and hidden space, this life will not be the journey you want. It will be what Buddha said, it will be suffering. Life is suffering. It does not have to be suffering. It can be an unbelievable communion with God itself. That's what it can be. That's in fact what it is. You know? You and I had a really interesting class today. And there was a fascinating... It was like duality finding its way to singularity. It was happening at such a microcosmic cellular level. It was so powerful and so profound, and it was so clear to me where our hiddenness, if you will, and our need for availability were in a dance mode, and they finally arrived. They finally arrived. It took a while, in my experience of it, for this complete singularity to arrive. We both had to let go of something in that dance to find this real, pure connection. I didn't want to leave that prematurely, because I was leaving it feeling something not done. And something came into my mind that says, there's a class here that wants to go home. And you and I are in this thing that has to be finished. And I just said, basically, screw the class. I'm staying here. And I'm going to stare at this thing, or watch it, or observe it, or love it, until it does whatever it seems to have to do. But I know it wasn't to stay in any kind of configuration. And then it did it. It just did it. It came right out of here, actually. Just came right through there. And it just went right into you, and yours came right back, and it was like... And it was like ego dissolution. It was very pure, but it took the battle zone, standing there, being in the present, not knowing what the present was going to bring, not being in a position to run away from it and saying, oh, well, I'll do this tomorrow or the next time I see Phil. I don't know if there'll be a next time I'll see Phil. I have no idea, you know, for a million reasons. So here's the moment. The moment is, have this thing complete itself by being completely there with another human being. That's what this is. Every one of us has to be completely there with each other every minute. That's all I can tell you. And if you do that, the power of this life is beyond anything anyone's ever told you. I watched Rudy living a life, and I never understood what his life was, but I knew it was bigger than mine. I knew it was more powerful, more intense, more vibrant, more alive, more real, more communicative. It was more everything, and I didn't know how to get there. Now I see that you get there by being here now. That's how you get there. You don't have to go anywhere. You're not going to get there through a process. You're going to get there by being here and not stepping away when it's hard, not stepping away when you're afraid, not stepping away when you don't know what to do. And truly, even in our moment, there was a voice in me that said, I don't know what to do. I didn't know what to do. And what needed to be done arrived. Stay there long enough, it comes. Hang in there, and it comes. Now look, some days... it may not, and don't walk, don't make yourself crazy if it doesn't. Finally, often you have to say to yourself, oh well, and move on.
But that goes back to trust.
That goes back to trust, exactly. Thank you. Perfect. Perfect.
Bruce, as a witness of that happening, like I just felt it was so liberating and beautiful, and that just the rest of the class, I feel like they're just in awe of seeing that happening, and it's not... seen as something like, you know, I didn't feel excluded. It was so beautiful.
Thank you. I will tell you this. When that opening occurs with Phil and I, or with anybody else in the class, a part of your being is freed. We are so connected that everyone, every moment I have of exchange with each of you that opens something up, everyone else in this room is freed of that in themselves. Whatever that part is, open, done. It's an extraordinary thing. And so if each of you bring yourself to this place and are willing to participate in this, you are not only freeing you from a particular configuration, you're freeing everybody from that configuration, and in a way the world from that. Truly. So it's a remarkable process that's going on here in a very small microcosm, and we're tiny, we're very tiny in the larger scheme of things, but what we're doing is very real and meaningful. I think it has meaning. And if it doesn't have meaning, well, it still seems worth doing. So I'm going to stop because this has been a long one, but thank you guys very, very much for indulging this. It means everything to me. Thank you.